Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for April 28th, 2022, and it is Thursday. Hi, Dave.
Last Thursday of the month. Hello, Melody, and happy Superhero Day.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Here we go.
It's also National Take Our Daughters and Sons to Work Day. But more importantly, it's National Teach Children to Save Day. And that's an important day. I mean, developing these habits at a young age creates the basis for a lifetime of saving, and how important that is. We'll talk about how low folks' savings are later in the program, but involving children with a savings plan and money management skills prepare them for a solid future. To this day, Melody, my 31-year-old son and 25-year-old daughter have refused to apply for a credit card. The only plastic they have is a debit card, and that results in a direct debit from their checking account. They're debt-free. I consider that a good start.
It really is a good start. That's the key, is, you know, really being debt-free and not getting bogged down and into the world of credit.
Absolutely.
It's a bad place to be. So, and it's tough for young ones today because that's all that's been taught to them. And not only about saving should young ones be taught, but they should also be taught about real money and, you know, what a fiat currency is and the value of gold and silver. Because that's where the true savings begin, by also understanding that. But I don't know, I think you can teach that to a 3-year-old, but as they age, they do need to be taught and understand how they're losing their purchasing power. And, you know, so it's not all about paper investments and saving those dollars. Let's go ahead. And we had a nice comeback with the gold today. Again, pressure early in the morning, coming back, ending up again almost at 1900, 1897, up 10 bucks. Silver down 10 cents at $23.27. Platinum was up a dollar at 928, and palladium was up 15 at 2,295. The USDX today, I mean, it is on a tear, 103.63. I think we're going to talk about the dollar strength today. And to me, that's pretty much what's saving everything. But 103.63, it wasn't that long ago. It was ready to break into the 80s. Crude oil was up $3 today at 105.28. The S&P today up 614 points off the high. I saw it at one point. It was over 700, so it did reverse a little bit. 33,916. The S&P, that was up 2.5% at 42.87. The NASDAQ was up the most of the three, up 3%, 12,871. Everything's happy, you know. Hey, we're at the end of April. We made it through another month, I guess. Asian markets were all positive across the board, most all over 1%. Same way with Europe. Hey, don't worry, be happy. And 2.83 on the 10-year yield. So, what did natural gas was the only one that was down, but kind of reversed itself from yesterday's gains. And both oil and well, Brent's up 2%. And the oil number that I gave you was up 3%. So that's pretty much it in a – and, you know, if you read the headlines, I mean, everybody's talking and – you know, we'll continue to talk and so forth about what's happening in Ukraine. And, you know, it's and I don't know, Dave. We were warned that by Putin and Russian officials that there would be swift and tough military response to any further attack on Russian territory. And the United States was accused and its allies of undermining European security. And Russia's invasion, you know, we know what that's all about. And Russian Foreign Minister spokesperson Maria Zakharova said, "I don't advise you to test our patience further." And, you know, I don't know why we would, Dave, but, you know, I've heard that we already have NATO in there, right? With discussions and everything. So we should probably keep our fingers out of the hornet's nest, I would think.
We're in there directly too. I mean, we've sent senior officials to talk face to face with Zelensky. It's a growing conflict, and it's getting deeper, and it's getting more expensive, both in terms of aid to Europe and in turn to Ukraine, both military and civilian, military and humanitarian. It's going to ramp up another level. Putin seems intent, nothing deterring him at this point, not to sanctions that are wreaking havoc on Russia's economy and the Russian people. Even the few handfuls of billionaire oligarchs over there who have probably stolen over many, many years since the breakup of the old Soviet Union to gain their riches. But there's certainly a growing war of words going on, you know, from Putin's and Sergei Lavrov's continuing references to their nuclear arsenal and to not test their patience, as you mentioned. I mean, who knows where it all ends, but we're certainly, we meaning the West collectively, are certainly trying to show Putin that he can't get away with what he's doing without further consequence. So we shall see.
Yeah, but with that, what do we get in return? Our consequence for butting in. And you know what? Who knows if this is just a war of words?
Oh, clearly not.
To see who, you know, crosses the, you know, who puts the, you know, the red lines have been drawn and so forth. I don't believe it's worth a nuclear war. It is not worth a nuclear war. And to put and to push it to that direction, I question who's really at fault. And what's happening in Ukraine is terrible. You wouldn't think we'd see it in today's age. But, you know, nuclear war is not worth it. And we have no interests, national interests over there. We've been funneling money. We don't even know where it's going. Oh, it's going to Ukraine. Okay. Do we get a tally of what is being spent and so forth? No. And we know Ukraine was always corrupt, so you wonder where all that money is going. I mean, these are questions that need to be asked, so I don't think they'll ever be answered. But anyway, we did see that Russia did cut off the flow to two countries. And
Natural gas.
And so we have to Poland and Bulgaria And that was just earlier this week. Lots been going on this week, Dave. And the action came after both nations refused to pay for the commodity in rubles, something that Putin is requiring and growing Western support for. Amid the growing Western support for Ukraine, the decision to put further pressure on the EU, which imports about 40% of all its natural gas from Moscow, is to find alternative solutions.
Well, speaking of the war of words, European Commission Pres Ursula von der Leyen accused Putin yesterday of blackmailing the EU. Kremlin spokesperson dismissed accusations that they're using their gas supplies to extort European nations, saying Russia was a reliable energy supplier. But the pressure could escalate if the Russian state-owned gas company Gazprom chooses to cut supplies to other EU nations. The Kremlin has warned that other countries will face that same issue if they don't pay for their bills in rubles, something the European Commission opposes because they say it would breach current sanctions.
Well, you know, Germany stopped it first. But you know what? It's funny. I mean, why wouldn't they have known that this would eventually come about, that, you know, that the flow would eventually stop? You know, I mean, sometimes you really have to wonder.
Well, I think they anticipated that it would.
Yeah, well, then you would think that they would already have the supplies needed
You'd think.
And they would have cut it first instead of waiting for Putin, but it makes Putin look worse by him doing it.
Well, I'm wondering, too, how in that vein, if, it's going to come out somewhere along the line that you know, certain countries made overtures in private to Germany and other EU countries to make up for what they going to be losing from Russia. It certainly could be the U.S., could be Canada. That'd be very damaging politically to both of those countries. But it does make you think that part of it.
It does, and you know what? You'd also have to think that Putin has a backup plan too. I mean, they've been trying to build that pipeline down through North Korea to South Korea, and that is, you know, so he probably has other buyers. You know, China is going to pick up probably any slack, or a lot of it maybe. You know, but if the world is heading into a recession, like everybody thinks it is, you know, so I don't know. It's
China's not in the best of positions right now either. I mean, it's not like just, you know, a few years ago when it easily could have picked up that slack. Now I'm not so sure, particularly with this zero COVID policy of Xi Jinping. The slack will be practical. Now maybe that's what Xi meant when he talked about, you know, supporting the new relationship with Putin. It certainly makes sense that it would.
And I would think it would be almost impossible to have a zero degree of, you know, I mean, that's just the only way you can do that is if you shoot everybody, and then you still can't say that you'd eradicate 100%. I mean, that's like saying, oh, we're going to eradicate. No one can have a cold. No.
But what do you say? What do you say to a nation whose leaders are talking about mandatory tests, COVID tests for 20 million people?
I'm not buying it.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I'm not buying the information that we're getting from China. So I don't know what would be going on. I don't know, you know, what the truth is. but I don't know. I just find that hard to believe.
Big, bad, lying bear.
Yeah. Just like all of them are. Just like all of them. And, you know, we mentioned all the money. Here's another $33 billion more going for aid in Ukraine. I mean, it's just like, how much have we, are we at a trillion yet?
3.7 billion.
And then here's another $33 billion. That's a lot. And I think it's, I don't know. But it's went to Congress today. Biden asked Congress today. And this massive aid package is going to be accompanied by a proposal to Congress that it amend several longstanding criminal laws to make it easier for the U.S. to seize the assets of sanctioned Russian oligarchs and then sell it and then send the proceeds to Ukraine. You know, I don't know, Dave. It just
what gets
just
your
smells
code,
like
Melody?
It just smells like a skunk in the wood pile.
I see the steam rising.
No, it's just you need to question, and you know, because it doesn't make sense. You know, because once you reverse those laws for so the U.S. can seize Russian oligarchs, that I'm sure it doesn't just zero in on them. You know, who else would that apply to? That the U.S. can go out and seize assets of anyone that they choose to and sell the seized property and send the proceeds to someone that they want. I don't know.
Well, they can't do it with two Americans without just compensation.
Well, I don't know if that makes it right, but...
No, it just makes it constitutional.
Anything else you'd like to add to that, Dave?
No.
Before we get into the break, the GDP, that unexpectedly declined 1.4% annualized pace. That's in the first quarter, making it an abrupt reversal for an economy that supposedly is coming off its best performance since 1984. The negative growth rate missed even the subdued estimate of 1% gain for the quarter. And if we, you know, GDP measures the output of goods and services in the U.S. for a three-month period. We can finish this up when we come back from break, so please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk TeamUpRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and, of course, our blog that Dave does that comes out on Fridays. And give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. 4188. And already I'm beginning, you know, with the process of the prices of gold going up and down, I'm already beginning to hear a lot of strange predictions and comments and where it's going and how high it's going. And it's and remember, folks, just stay focused. The fundamentals are there. It can go up. It can go down. Nothing ever goes straight up and never comes and corrects itself. And if you bought high and it came down a little low, that's okay. The whole point is you have it. And I'll guarantee you, even with the lower prices, it's still probably outpacing the impact of inflation on your purchasing power. So, and that's what it's all about. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And heading into the break, we were talking about the GDP declining 1.4% in the first quarter. And let's see, anything else you'd like to add to that, Dave?
Well, just a couple of things. I mean, there's a surprising 8.5% pullback in defense spending, which caught me by surprise. That was said to be a drag on the final GDP reading. Other restraints came from exports as well as government spending at the state and local level, as well as the federal, and consumer spending, which we know accounts for 2/3 of GDP, held up fairly well for the quarter, even rising close to 3%. And then again, there was the burgeoning trade deficit, helped shave 3.2 percentage points off GDP growth. So what it means and what it's leading to, time will tell. The optimist, Ian Shepherdson, who's an economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics, says that the economy is not about to fall into a recession. Again, the proof will be in the pudding of, I believe, over the next couple of months. But particularly as we see the effects that the Fed rate increases, and as well as their drawing down in their $9 trillion balance sheet really takes hold. I think there's further trouble ahead, Melody.
Well, I agree. And, you know, it's funny, if we would head into a recession, they come in, actually admit it, they just wouldn't talk about it like they do before. You know, they just, well, hey, we're in a recession. Okay, let's go.
Next.
You know, and, you know, and it's funny is I think we're seeing a lot in the, you know, headlines and so forth. You had Amazon, they plunged on weak forecast. And, so you're going to see a lot of strange things, but I think the culprit that, you know, as we're seeing the strength in the dollar, it's basically heading for the best month in a decade, as renewed yen selling cemented the strength against the major, against its major peers. And, you know, everybody talks about the elimination of the dollar and so forth. And certainly we've seen less countries, you know, some of them dump the dollar and some of them not buying as many and with treasuries and so forth. But, it isn't all what it looks to be. So I think we need a drum roll, Dave, because it is Jobless Thursday. Anyway, initial jobless claims last week were a bit higher than expected, but still a reflective of a labor market. First-time claims for benefits in the week ending April 16th totaled 184,000. That's a decline of 2,000 from the previous week, but just ahead of economists' estimates of 182,000. The number indicates that the nation's employment picture remains historically tight, as job openings still outnumber the available labor pool by about 5 million. Continuing claims, which run a week behind the headline number, fell by 58,000 to 1.417. There was a separate economic report out today that showed that manufacturing in the Philadelphia region in April so far expanded, but at a slower pace than what they were expecting. And it registered 17.6 reading. And that's representing the difference between companies seeing expansion versus contraction. Now, that was a decline of nearly 10 points from March. So I think that is a pretty big drop. And you know what's always interesting, Dave, is they always say, well, it's a slower pace than expected, instead of just saying, hey, it declined 10 points.
Yeah, right.
You know, so that's a big drop. But measures of new orders, shipments, unfilled orders, delivery times, and the average employee work week also showed declines for March. However, prices paid and prices received both increased, reflecting continued inflation pressures, Dave.
Well, yesterday's release of the Fed's Beige Book, which is their summary of economic conditions around the country, noted difficulties that companies are having finding workers. That's been a continuing issue, as we've been talking about, for over a year now. The report said that demand for workers continued to be strong against most districts and industry sectors, but hiring was held back by the overall lack of available workers. Many firms reported significant turnover as workers left for higher wages and more flexible job schedules. We'll be talking further about that in a little bit. Now, markets expect the Fed to increase its Fed funds rate several times more this year. We've seen estimates ranging from a total of 2.25 percentage points to as much as 3 percentage points this year, from virtually zero where it stood at the beginning of the year. Now, back to the jobless claims numbers. Some economists think that the latest numbers reflect continued progress in hiring. Total number of folks receiving benefits, a little over 1.6 million. A year ago, that number was 17.4 million. The difference a year makes, right? Still, the labor market hasn't quite caught up to its pre-pandemic self, even though the unemployment rate has fallen. I'm not going to say to what. And the government likes us to think it's 3.6%. It's really a minimum of 7.1. The effect, if you include shorter-term discouraged workers, and in double figures, if you include longer-term discouraged workers who really want to work. Most of them are older Americans, but you know, to those who say there's no age discrimination in this country, I ask you to stop any man or woman on the street who has gray hair and ask them what kind of, one, are they employed? It's more likely than not that they're not. Two, are they willingly unemployed? Ask them how many jobs they've applied for in the last year or so, and how many interviews they've had. Only, you know, you hear about, oh, we're desperate for workers, and yet no one wants a graying American anymore.
You know, that should change, because you know what? I was talking to somebody else, one of my customers, and they were saying that, you know, they hire people. And she says, now when people come to work, they dictate how many hours they want to work, because if they work too many hours, they lose additional benefits. And she says, we just can't find anybody who wants to work our hours.
Mm.
And I've heard that before, where, you know, people will come to work, and they'll work for a while, and if they want off, they say they don't feel well, so then they're automatically given a 2-week, you know, free vacation, and then their benefits start all over again.
One of the beauties of working from home, or and, one of the consequences, depending on your perspective.
Well, it's a consequence of, you know, so many of these programs that were put in place for COVID to, you know, to help the people while they didn't have jobs and so forth, but they learned how to play the game. And that's, you know, but to go and apply for a job and, you know, say, I don't want to work more than, you know, 29 hours because it's going to upset my my free benefits that I get. You know, it's I don't know. I just don't know. Mortgage rates, they've edged down a little bit, first time in a couple of months. And we saw the 7 straight weeks of increases. The average rate on a 30-year mortgage, it kind of inched down to 5.1%. Remember last week it was 5.11, and it was the highest since April of 2010 last week. And but 1 year ago, the 30-year stood at 2.98%. That's how much it has risen. Almost certain that we know the Federal Reserve is going to raise their benchmark Fed funds rate by 0.5 next week. You're going to see other items also be increased, like, you know, mortgage rates, interest rates, consumer loans. It'll be interesting to see how everything reacts to that. And as we all know, the Fed raised its main borrowing rate by 0.25 in March, and that was the first time since 2018. So,
well, last week we talked about the National Association of Realtors reporting sales of previously occupied homes, not new homes, but previously occupied, fell to the slowest in nearly 2 years. They also said that surging mortgage rates and record high prices, sale prices, were sidelining would-be homeowners. That's bad because this time of year is usually a boon for homeowners, home builders, realtors. Median home prices in March jumped 15% from a year ago at this time. That's an all-time high going back to 1999. These rising mortgage rates and home prices, plus the tight supply of just homes that are available for sales, making home ownership less attainable, especially, again, for first-time buyers. Some economists now are suggesting that home sales could fall by 10% or more the rest of this year. So we will see. Interestingly, Freddie Mac talked about the average rate on 15-year fixed-rate mortgages, which is popular with folks refinancing their homes, especially as they get older, rose to 4.4%. That's up 6 basis points from last week. But more notably, it was at 2.3%.
Wow.
A year ago.
Wow. And I think that's what they're going to have to do to keep it going. But or they'll just do, you know, they'll increase rates and they'll go down and they'll. But I don't think they have the luxury of doing that. But that's probably what they think they're going to be doing. But and this is really interesting because in a related story, not since the housing bubble of 2007 has there been such a big gap between the cost of a new house and the amount a two-earner household can borrow in order to buy it. Homeowners are facing kind of a double whammy of higher prices and higher mortgage rates, which, of course, reduces the amount of money that they can borrow. Now, get this. The average new single-family home sold for $360,000 in April of 2020. Less than 2 years later, in March of 2022, that number had risen by 45% to $524,000. The median price rose 41% in the same period, Dave. It's amazing.
Well, yeah. I mean, here's the crux, though. At the same time, the mortgage available to two people making average hourly earnings has shrunk by $144,000 just since August. Now stands at a relatively low $469,000. And that's assuming they limit their mortgage payments to no more than 28% of their combined incomes. Yet housings are still affordable, but only, as we mentioned, if you're already in one. That means with the price of new housing at $524,000, you can't afford it, according to this data, because you're only qualifying for $469,000. So an interesting dichotomy there, Melody.
So the average hourly earnings shrunk by $144,000 in a two-year period?
Is that- No. It's the mortgage available.
Okay.
To them, to a couple who make the average hourly earnings, which is probably. I forget if it's 45 or 54, something in that range.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes a little bit more sense. I was going to say, wow, that's a lot of loss of purchasing power. Wow.
Indeed.
Although that we might face that here in the very near future. Yes, you know, it would be interesting to see.
Can't count it out.
I hear music. I hear the break, and that went by fast. So we will be returning shortly. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk TimUpRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back one more time today to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. I'm Dave Allen, Melody, helping clients with other business. This last segment, we alluded to this a little bit ago. Spring signaled the return of the commute as more companies are calling their employees back to the office. Even Dr. Fauci said the pandemic may be behind us. Although, one, try telling that to Xi Jinping. And two, Fauci seemed to backtrack today, saying he may have overstepped. Whatever the case, new numbers from Castle. It's an office security firm that tracks key card swipes in thousands of commercial buildings across the country show that offices in the 10 largest cities here are about 40% occupied. And that's up 15% from a year ago. Companies like Apple and Google began requiring employees to return to offices on a hybrid schedule this month, working some from home or working some at the office. But companies demanding people back to the office could see more employees leave their jobs in the coming months, at least according to new findings from the ADP Research Institute. Return-to-office mandates in particular could drive younger employees to quit. This report, called People at Work 2022, surveyed more than 32,000 workers from the U.S., India, Netherlands, and some other industrialized countries. And almost two-thirds of the workforce around the world, 64%, said they have already or would consider looking for a new job if their employer wanted them back in the office full-time. I know this is a pet peeve of Melody's. Economist Neela Richardson at ADP, she's one of the co-authors of the report, said even a few years ago, the thought of working in a hybrid arrangement was, excuse the pun, remote to most people. But now, she added, it's clear that hybrid work and the desire for flexibility after 2 years of working from home is not going away. In fact, it's growing in momentum. So 71% of 18 to 24-year-olds said they'd consider looking for another job if their company insisted on them returning. That goes down with age, 61% in the mid-30s to mid-40s, and 56% of 45 to 54-year-olds. Here's one that's concerning and should be a wake-up call. There are some financial goals more pressing for adults right now, it appears, than bulking up their nest egg. For 2022, just 17% of American adults have made saving for retirement their top financial priority, according to the latest financial wellness survey from the First National Bank of Omaha. Bet you Warren Buffett shops there. And nearly half of respondents, 46%, said they have less than $15,000 saved for retirement. No word on their average age. Additionally, 59% worry they won't be able to retire by age 65. Now, for most who aren't now, their average age is going to be 67. by next year, I believe, in any event. So what are people more focused on when it comes to their finances right now? Well, 40% say increasing non-retirement savings is their main goal. 30% say they want to pay off their debt. Well, a laudable goal. Retirement security, however, is a pressing issue for many workers. And with fewer traditional pensions offered by companies, retirees generally have to rely on Social Security and their own savings to fund a retirement that could stretch for two or three decades, or even more. Roughly a quarter of adults in the U.S. have no retirement savings at all. Now, among retirement savers, the average 401k balance for those aged 55 to 64 is $84,700, roughly, according to Vanguard. Now, generally, financial experts recommend that you have 10 times your annual salary saved if you want to retire at age 67. Here's one that gets my goat. Remember back to a year ago or so, Bill Hwang, remember him? Well, he was indicted yesterday. And that indictment alleges a remarkably simple route to defrauding some of the world's most sophisticated financial institutions. I got to put sophisticated in quotes. I'm sorry. It says Hwang and his family office, Archegos, simply lied to them. In a sweeping criminal indictment and civil complaint, federal authorities say that Hwang and his associates used Archegos as an instrument of market manipulation and fraud. They also offered new details on how, they allege, the firm fraudulently convinced major Wall Street banks to extend Archegos billions of dollars worth of credit. Many of them were too big to fail banks. If you're scratching your head about how Wall Street works, never let an epic screw-up go to waste. When something goes wrong, and even better, criminal indictments arrive, that's when you get to see a little closer how things actually work. And as screw-ups go, the March 2021 implosion of the hedge fund like Archegos was one for the ages, eventually costing banks like Morgan Stanley, Nomura, and Credit Suisse billions of dollars. The government alleges that Hwang, a former lieutenant, manipulated prices in publicly traded stocks. No big deal, right? I mean, option traders and Wall Street firms' high-frequency computers do it every day, often at the expense of everyday American investors like you and me. But what the option traders and the high-frequency computers do are legal. What Hwang and his lieutenant did, apparently not so much. However, Hwang didn't always buy shares of stocks. Instead, he was often buying a product from the bank called an equity swap, which is a contract with the payouts tied to movements in stocks, either up or down. When you buy such a swap, which unfortunately is totally legal, you get the benefits of owning a stock without having to really own it. At some point, banks that sold swaps to Hwang and extended him large amounts of credit noticed he was making remarkably large bets. And this generated loads of fees for them, the banks, but also put them at risk. Because if Hwang's bets went against him, he could wind up owing them large amounts of money he didn't have. The banks started asking questions like, hey, by the way, are these the only crazy bets you're making? You're not doing this with anybody else, right? Well, government alleges that throughout 2020 and 2021, Archegos' responses to such questions were often, quote, deceptive, false, and misleading. Such statements, the government says, amount to violations of anti-fraud provisions of securities and commodities trading laws. It's interesting. Actually, it's a joke. See, the banks being portrayed by federal authorities as the victims in this saga. especially since several of them saw red flags around Archegos, but stuck with Wang all the way down. It's hard to say why they did, but I'll bet the fees they pocketed from the massive amounts of business he did on Wall Street had a little something to do with it. All right, bear with me here. Heard this number of times in the past 2 years. We're hearing it again. This time they're saying President Biden is suggesting to lawmakers that he's not only looking at further extending the pause on federal student loan payments beyond August, but could also soon announce a actual broader cancellation of some student loan debt. At a closed-door meeting with members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus earlier this week, Biden indicated that he may soon issue an executive order to cancel some federal student loan debt. About 40 million Americans hold a total of roughly $1.7 trillion in that kind of debt. Progressive Democratic lawmakers have been urging Biden to cancel student debt up to as much as $50,000. Biden previously has indicated that he was unlikely to eliminate that much in debt per person. During his campaign for president, he said he supported legislation forgiving $10,000 of debt per person, even if even that would be significant to a number of debt holders. But we'll see what happens. Just telling you what's going on. We'll let you know if we hear anything in particular. Now, after 2 years of unprecedented growth, post-pandemic reality is kicking in for big tech. Huge revenue gains during the pandemic inspired tech titans, media titans, to take big bets. Now as growth stalls, Wall Street wants them to pivot from promise to profit. Yesterday, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg strayed from his typical earnings call remarks and told investors that given current growth levels, we are now planning to slow the pace of some of our investments. Meta's revenue percentage growth sank to single digits last quarter. Company warned investors that next quarter growth may continue to dwindle as well. Google parent Alphabet saw its shares fall 3% earlier this week after it reported weaker than expected advertising revenue growth at YouTube and slowed growth for Google Search compared to last year. And Spotify, its stock fell to an all-time low yesterday after missing Wall Street estimates on paid user growth. Investors were wary that the audio streamers could hit a Netflix-like ceiling. Slow growth coming out of the pandemic in conjunction with wider factors, including inflation and the war in Ukraine, is forcing the biggest companies in media, tech, and entertainment to temper their expectations. Netflix executives are vowing to impose more financial discipline in response to a massive sell-off last week. The company lost more than $200 billion in market value. And Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav told his shareholders this week, "We will not overspend to drive global subscriber growth." He noted that durable and sustainable free cash flow generation was a top priority. As more companies begin to streamline their costs, it may help consumers feel less overwhelmed by options. Netflix will reportedly focus on producing fewer, higher quality programs a year after record high volume in original scripted series. And then there's Zoom. All those Zoom meetings, the report says, could be stunting innovation. A new academic study shows that in-person meetings generate more ideas and more creative ones compared to video conferencing. Let's zoom in, shall we? In a laboratory study that started before the pandemic, more than 600 people worked in pairs in person or virtually for 5 minutes to come up with ideas on how to creatively use bubble wrap or a Frisbee. Then they had a minute to pick their best idea. Judges scored their creativity based on novelty and value. Pairs working on Zoom came up with fewer ideas. According to Melanie Brooks of Columbus Business School, Columbia Business School, and Jonathan Levav of the Stanford Graduate School of Business, whose findings were reported in the journal Nature, of all places. An oft-overlooked ingredient in the secret sauce of collaboration is that in person, team members typically share visual cues from their environment and each other that can spur new ideas. In a virtual meeting, all eyes are focused on screens and ignore the environment. In a lab, virtual pairs spend more time looking at their partner and less time looking at the surrounding room. People also move less when they meet virtually. Staying hinders virtual creativity. It's food for thought for remote workers and their bosses. We will see. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch. Also, What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the morning. On behalf of Melody, many thanks again, as always, to our engineer Todd and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.